Then, Christian, greetings to each one here this evening. It's good to be here with you. As I was sitting here before services, I seen your memory verse for next Sunday, Matthew 2:11. It brought back a bit of a memory. Back when I was quite a little boy, we went to Lost Creek Mennonite Church for summer Bible school. And there we had Bible school for 2 weeks. John and Virginia Sainer would pick us up at the farm, take us down for Bible school, and then come back down to pick us up and take us home. I think I was about second grade, about the second evening, that was our memory verse. And our teacher, dear old kind lady, and I can't remember her name, but she tried so hard to get me to say that verse, and I would not do it. I guess I was a bit of a stubborn little boy. But anyhow, yeah, I wouldn't say the verse. At the end of 2 weeks, we had Bible school for 2 weeks. The last evening, we would have a program for all the parents would come in, and yeah, we'd have a program. As we were getting ready for the program, she needed somebody to say that verse, and nobody volunteered, and finally, I said, I'll do it. And I remember she was quite doubtful that I would. Well, the evening of the program, when it was my turn to say my verse, I stood up and I said, and they presented unto him gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, Matthew 2:11. I remember the look on her face. And later, after the program, she gave me a little gift and told me how proud she was. But anyhow, yeah, I don't know why things like that come back to mind. Anyhow, as I was preparing for this evening, I was thinking about, here we are at the beginning of a new year. And I think it's good for us to sometimes reflect back over the past, think about the past year, and also think about the coming year. As we think about the past year, there's probably some things that we're glad about, and there may be other things that we kind of wish we would have done differently. And there may be some here that are getting older, and you begin to feel the effects of aging. And while there's others here that probably experience the joys of a newborn. And I think over the past year, we have all experienced to some degree or other some joys and some difficulties. And maybe as we look into the new year, we face it with some uncertainties. But I also believe as we look back into the past year, we would all agree that God is good. God is faithful and God is good. Now, what makes us say that? What makes us believe that? Well, God is good. God is God, and He is a good God. Psalm 33:5 tells us, the earth is full of the goodness of God, of the Lord. Chapter 34, verse 8, O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is a man that trusteth in Him. And if we look around, we see the goodness of God all around us. We see it with each new day. We see it in our families. God has blessed us with families. We see it in the church. We see it in the brotherhood. What would we do without the church, without the brotherhood? We also see it in material blessings. God has blessed us richly. And so we see His goodness in that. And we also experience His goodness in our heart, in our salvation, and what God has saved us from, and what He is preparing for us who love Him. Now, if everything would be taken from us, everything but our salvation, could we still say that God is good? Would we still say that indeed God is good? What if all our material blessings were taken from us? Do we gauge God's goodness by how He has blessed us? Can we still bless and thank God when times are difficult, when times are rough? As I was thinking of this, I was thinking of a man in the Old Testament. This man had it all. He had everything that I believe we as men would desire. He had family. He had a lot of possessions. I think he was a wealthy man. It says that he had large herds of sheep, camels, cattle, and it says he had a very great household. And it also says he was the greatest man of the East. And it was all taken away. And I'm challenged as I think of his response. Let's look at Job chapter 1. Job chapter 1, verse 1. And there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. And there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 she asses, and a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all men of the East. And his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day, and sent and called for their 3 sisters to eat and to drink with them. And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning, and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus did Job continually. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, "Whence comest thou?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man? Excuse me. One that feareth God and escheweth evil." Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast thou not made a hedge about him, about his house, and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and the substance, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand." So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. I think I'll stop there for now. Verse 1 says that Job was a perfect and an upright in the sight of God. I don't believe Job was sinless, but he dealt with his sin. He endeavored to follow the commands of God. Job says in Chapter 9, verse 20, "If I say I am perfect, it shall also prove me perverse." I think Job was human just as we are. But he was one that feared God and eschewed evil. He shunned evil. He wanted nothing to do with it. Wanted nothing to do with evil. He was an upright and a God-fearing man. And God blessed Job with a large family, with many possessions. I think he blessed him with a large estate. And we also see later on that Job was concerned about his family, and he offered burnt offerings on their behalf. Verse 5 says, "For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus did Job continually. Going into verse 6. "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them." And I'm not sure, I really don't want to elaborate too much on this verse, because I'm not exactly sure how this all was. different writers have different things to say about this, but perhaps it was a time when some angels came and came together to converse with God. But Satan was there as well. How did Satan come into the presence of God? Well, like I said, I'm not sure. But this we know, that Satan was there. Satan, the accuser of the brethren. And God, and the Lord said unto him, "When comest thou?" And he said, "From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it." And I wonder if perhaps Satan was walking around in the earth, looking to who, to whom that he could cause mischief, and to see what, see who he could ensnare. Was it perhaps, was Satan also there perhaps to accuse God? Of what other people that named the name of God were doing and yet were not. In other words, I'll put it this way. Was Satan perhaps going to God and saying, you know, here's a man, here's someone that names your name, and yet he's not honest. He's deceitful. He's only part of the church because of the benefits that he can receive from it. I don't know. But God said to him, "Did you consider my servant Job? Verse 8, and the Lord said unto Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil?" And then Satan again pointing his accusing finger, I think, back in the face of God, when he said in verse 9, "Doth Job fear God for naught?" And Satan said, you know, the reason Job is serving you is because all the things you have done for him. You have given him a great family. You have given him a lot of possessions. You put a hedge around him. You're protecting him. That's why he's serving you. He was accusing God. And then Satan also said to God, "If you take all that away that he has, that you have given to him, he's going to curse you to your face." And so the Lord granted Satan permission to destroy all of Job's possessions. Verse 12. And the Lord said unto Satan, "Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand." So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. And there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their elders' brother's house. And there came a messenger unto Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside them. And the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee." While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, "The fire of God is fallen from heaven and hath burned up the sheep and the servants, and consume them, and only I am escaped alone to tell thee." While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, "Chaldeans made out three bands, and fell upon the camels, and have carried them away, yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, "Thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." We'll stop there for a minute. I don't think we can hardly imagine what Job went through. Imagine what it would have been like to experience this. Job, hearing the news of the first tragedy, being in shock, and yet a very short time later, receiving the news of another tragedy, and another, and then finally, he lost his family. I think we can hardly imagine that, especially because, you know, we're a people that we want what we want, and we want it when we want it. We plan, and we like when our plans hold out. Sometimes we judge our day, whether we had a good day or not, according to how our things, our plans went. So I think it's hard for us to imagine what Job went through. You know, we're in a hurry. Maybe we're in a hurry to get on a trip, and halfway through we have a flat tire, and then we complain about that inconvenience. We think about what Job went through. But I am really much encouraged and blessed and also challenged as I think of his response. Verse 20. Then Job arose, rent his mantle, shaved his head, fell down upon the ground, and worshipped. And he worshipped. He rent his mantle and shaved his head. And that was a custom of that day then when a man was in great sorrow. But we notice here that Job, he humbled himself under the mighty hand of God. He worshipped and he blessed God. And he knew in his heart that God was still good. I think that was settled in his heart. Perhaps even, well, I believe it was settled in his heart even before God blessed him with all these things. And I think it's pretty obvious because of what his response was when he lost it all. He humbled himself. He submitted himself to God. He says in verse 21, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return hither. The Lord gave, the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all of this, he continued to worship God. He continued to adore God. And Job recognized that God was a giver of all these things, and they were still God's. And that can be a challenge for us. Sometimes we like to keep a hold of what we have, and we, should I say, we justify ourselves in that by saying, you know, we worked hard and we saved and we did this, we did that, we worked hard to build our business up and whatever else. And so we feel we own it, we owe it to ourselves. But that is not at all Job's attitude. He knew that what he was given came from God, and it was still God's, and he was going to allow God to do with it whatever he wanted. And then all of this, Job still glorified God. He did not blame God. Verse 22 says, in all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. He did not blame God for what happened. And that's a challenge for me as well. You know, perhaps at times we do blame God. Maybe we don't necessarily. We wouldn't say that. But do we perhaps sometimes have that attitude? You know, after all, we think, you know, God, why did you allow this to happen? You could have changed it. You could have, you know, you have things in your control. And you could have prevented this. But yet I think with that attitude, we're blaming God. We have to realize that God does have a reason for what he does. Job humbled himself and submitted himself under the mighty hand of God. Now we know the rest of the account, how that, it says in chapter 42, the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than the beginning. Job was blessed again. Now there were some things, God had a few things to say to Job about the way he was acting and all, but yet we have to realize Job was human as we are. And, he had feelings too. But I think God allowed this to show Satan that indeed he does have a faithful servant. And I'm challenged as I think of that. And so in closing, I would like to present a few things for you to consider. God is good no matter what our circumstances is. And also, God has a plan for each of us, and He has our good in mind, and He wants us to learn to serve others and to bring glory to Himself. And as we face this year, let us be assured that God is good, and let us commit our way unto Him, and He will direct our path. Let's stand for prayer.